三一之堂走起就难了，将出白度的你看自己大地震所以你所能力那里跟前送你如快速。I go for refuge until I am enlightened. The Buddha is a Dharma in the assembly of saints. And the richest merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. The Buddha is a Dharma in the assembly of saints. And the richest merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain in the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. The middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents, ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as the Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure land. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariwara Ratna Mandala Buddha Mega Samudra Saparana Samadhi. Well, welcome to another teaching on Sakyapanditas, clarifying the sage's intent. So just to review where we are, where we have arrived, we're studying the perfection of patience. We've talked about producing the antidote to the cause of anger, and following that, we've talked about producing the antidote to the result of anger. So preventing it, and if we don't prevent it, then fixing it if we fall prey to it. In terms of producing the antidote to the result, there are, which of course is patience, there's three kinds of patience. The patience of enduring sufferings, the patience of definitely considering the three factors from the viewpoint of the two truths, and patience of not considering the other as harmer. So we talked about the patience of enduring sufferings. Mahayana path is a great path, and there's bound to be suffering and hardship, and we should expect that and learn to deal with that. Now we will go on to the second one, which is patience of definitely considering the three factors from the viewpoints of the two truths. Apirimpshe says, there are two ways of practicing the second method to counteract anger. One is from the perspective of relative truth, and the other is from the perspective of ultimate truth. From the relative perspective, it's plain to see that the nature of the fire element is heat, the nature of the water element is fluidity, the nature of the earth element is solidity, and the nature of the air element is movement. And in the same way, the nature of cyclic existence is suffering. As we are part of this world, it follows that it is our nature to experience suffering. We should also understand that it is our nature as sentient beings to harm each other due to our selfish desire for our own benefit. In brief, based on the understanding that the nature of this world is suffering, that it is our nature to experience suffering, and that it is the nature of sentient beings to bring about suffering in each other, we can subdue our anger and practice patience. We are all familiar with the behavior known as causing self-harm. These days, we often read about people who commit suicide by jumping off of a cliff or shooting themselves or whatever, perhaps just because a business deal failed. But what we may not always be aware that the harm we do to others is really self-harm. And the reason is it will result in similar harm being done to us in the future. Therefore, if someone harms us now, it's because we must have done something against them in the past. We're simply being repaid for negative deeds performed in previous lifetimes. As a result of our past actions, that we have been born into this world to experience the sufferings of birth, old age, sickness, and death. Since we ourselves create great suffering by carrying out non-virtuous deeds, it is we who are harming ourselves. In brief, with this understanding, we can see that the person who appears to be harming us is not the principal cause of our suffering. Our present sufferings arise mainly from our past misdeeds. Therefore, there's no point in becoming angry with someone who may appear to be harming us. The harm they do is a small matter compared with the great harm we are doing to ourselves all the time. And if we really understand this, we will not produce a retaliatory attitude. In fact, we will not even see another person's, quote, harmful, unquote, actions as being harmful to us in any way. 42nd Psychic Treason comments by saying, the third kind of patience is patience in which you disregard any harm done to you. Here, we reflect on the person who harms us, thinking that they are not a harmful person. We usually believe that the victim is experiencing much more suffering than the one who inflicts the harm, but in reality, it's not like this. As a result of such action, the person who harms will experience more suffering in the future. Contemplating in this way, we should practice patience towards those who harm us. This kind of patience has three aspects. Gradually training with respect to different objects, with respect to time, and with respect to different natures of harmful people. In training with respect to different objects, we begin by cultivating patience toward our relatives and friends because it's easier for us to practice in this way. And then we extend our practice to include neighbors, neutral people, and finally, those whom we perceive as enemies. In this way, we gradually increase the scope of our patience to eventually include all beings without any exception. Now, of course, if we are able to practice patience toward all beings from the start, that is the best. To train in patience with respect to time, we first cultivate it for a short time, and then gradually we increase the duration of our practice until we are able to practice it all the time. Training with respect to the different natures of harmful people is based on three main reasons. The first reason we should be patient with others is that all sentient beings have been dear to us. We have been born in samsara infinite times, and each time we have had different parents who have been dear to us. The second reason is that we should not think that those who harm us are causing obstacles to our Dharma practice and then feel justified in being angry with them. Instead, we should think that we rely on these individuals to cultivate our virtues, and in particular, the virtue of patience. We can only develop patience by facing harmful beings. They are therefore the cause of our practice. To attain Buddhahood, we need to practice the six perfections, which includes the practice of the perfection of patience. Harmful beings are therefore a necessary condition for us to attain Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. So at this point, I'll just comment something that Geshe Thashi Namgyel used to say, which is that a true practitioner of the perfections, particularly the perfection of patience, when they encounter somebody that really annoys them, they actually give them gifts so they will hang around them even more and annoy them even more so they can perfect their practice of patience. There's another example of that, which is the great Indian Saint Atisha, who was a very important historical figure in terms of the transference of Buddha Dharma from India to Tibet. For example, he brought the mind trainings to Tibet and he brought the green Tara practice to Tibet. And when he was traveling from India to Tibet, he had a group of attendants who were with him. He was quite old at the time. And also, they're going across the Himalaya Mountains. And there was one person in his entourage who was just a real pain in the neck. He was just always causing trouble for everybody. And the other attendants, at a certain point, they just got fed up with this. And so they went to Atisha and they said, "Master, this guy is just really a real pain. Do you think you could, do something about him or talk to him or something?" He said, "No, I want him deliberately here to hassle us so that we can practice patience." The third reason to consider is that the experience of harm done to us will exhaust our own negative past karma in this life. We should therefore feel relief rather than getting upset, because it's far better to exhaust our negative karma in the human realm rather than in the hell realm or the other lower realms. Generally, it's important that we practice patience towards those who are in a weaker position than us. When a strong person strikes a weaker person, the latter might not fight back only because they feel overpowered. However, real patience means that even when a stronger person is attacked, they remain calm despite being able to fight back. Upi Rinpoche says that in order to transform our practice of patience into the perfection of patience, we must conjoin it with the four positive qualities and we must abandon the seven negative attachments. The four positive qualities of patience are: all forms of anger must be relinquished. Number two, it must be associated with the non-conceptual realization of ultimate reality, that is, the selflessness of persons and phenomena. And three, by relying on patience, we must work to fulfill others' wishes. By the way, that means non-retaliation. And number four, by relying on patience, we must work to ripen sentient beings by placing them on one of the three Buddhist paths. By the way, all of these, the four positive qualities and the seven attachments, these are all meditation topics. So we need to hear them, we need to contemplate them, and then we need to meditate about them in order for them to go in really deep inside of us and really change us, in a really deep, fundamental way. Hapi Rinpoche continues saying, if we can conjoin all four of these qualities within a single act of patience, we are practicing the perfection of patience correctly. To elaborate briefly on this, by not producing hatred or anger when someone harms us, we accomplish the first quality. If that is conjoined with the realization of the ultimate state of being of the three factors of patience, the second quality is present. The three factors are the doer, the receiver, and the actor. By not deliberately retaliating, we have fulfilled the harmer's wishes. Thus, the third quality is present. They may be a little surprised by our response. Their wish to harm us may be transformed into a feeling of warmth, friendship, and curiosity. And they may even approach us and ask us to explain why we have this attitude. It's possible then that this can lead them onto the path of Dharma, and thus the fourth quality is fulfilled. If all four qualities are present in this one act of patience, it becomes the perfection of patience. While practicing patience, we must also abandon the seven attachments, which are as follows. Number one, the attachment to anger, which is the opposite of patience. Number two, the attachment to postponement, the idea that we can retaliate now and then practice patience later. We should abandon such a thought. Patience should be practiced right at the moment when the harm is being inflicted on us. Number three, attachment to being satisfied with the amount of patience we are practicing. An example of this is when someone harms us and we exercise just a little patience, feeling satisfied, oh, that's enough, or feeling that we should exert patience for just a few minutes and then we can retaliate. We should never be satisfied with the amount of patience we are practicing. And we should keep on increasing the amount. Number four is the attachment to the expectation of some reward in this lifetime. For example, when someone does harm us, we might think that by being patient with them, they will like us or reward us. Number five, attachment to expecting positive results in future lives. We should abandon any hope of reward and just practice patience in order to accumulate virtue. Number six, attachment to any inclination to factors opposing patience. In this case, the disposition towards anger. And number seven, the attachment to the two distractions. The distraction of speculation, which means to take pleasure in a lower vehicle, and the distraction to conceptual thought, which means to have a conceptual attachment to the three factors of the act of practicing patience, that is, the recipient of the harm, the harmer, and the act of patience itself. So that is the end of the individual antidotes. Now we will talk about the benefits of patience. Sakyapandita himself says, the benefits of cultivating patience. There are two main types of benefits, temporary and ultimate, and the temporary benefits are also of two types, those that occur in this life and those that occur in future lives. The benefits of patience that accrue in this life include the following. By being able to disregard the harm others cause you, you will not act harmfully in return. And by virtue of that, the harmful thoughts and efforts of others will be pacified of their own accord. And when that occurs, your body and mind become comfortable. In the short term, troubles cease. And in the long term, all enemies will become pacified of their own accord. You will experience inestimable other benefits such as fearlessness even when dying and passing on to the next life. As to the benefits arising in all future lives, wherever you are born in the future, you will have an excellent body. Your life will be long and free from illness. You will have neither human nor demonic enemies. And also, all the full and excellent attainments of gods and humans will automatically arise for you, such as being a universal emperor. As Shantideva said, while wandering in cyclic existence, a patient person will live for a very long time, having bodily excellences such as beauty, the enjoyment of freedom from illness and good repute, and attain the extensive pleasures of a universal emperor. Just to say a word about universal emperor, this is a figure in the Dharma who has sort of a dual role, both as a worldly ruler and a Dharma person, a worldly ruler in the sense of a very vast empire, more or less the known world at that time in history. And because of that, they're in a position to spread the Dharma. And so it's a very unique kind of historical figure. An example of that would be the Indian Emperor Ashoka. The Perfection of Wisdom Sutra says, through patience, you will attain an extremely beautiful and exalted body, attractive and dear to the world of animate beings. And Nagarjuna said, one who has relinquished anger attains irreversibility on the path to liberation. Thus did the Buddha promise. In terms of the ultimate benefits of patience, the ultimate benefits of patience are that you will attain the 32 marks and the 80 physical characteristics of a Buddha's body and will possess a body and voice that will captivate the minds of everyone. As Maitreya said in the Ornament of Mahayana Sutras, which, by the way, is the Maitreya text that Sakyapandita's commentary is based on, and that text says, when all embodied beings see you, they know you to be a great king. Homage to you who inspire intense faith merely by being seen. Now, that quotation gives me the opportunity to promote the Tuesday night meditation that we do here at the center, which is the Shakyamuni Buddha practice, which is, in fact, an extended praise written by Maitreya. So it's a very special text. It has been practiced in this center every Tuesday night for more than 50 years. It was a favorite text of Geshe-la's, a favorite practice of Geshe-la's. And the quote that's in Sakyapandita's text is translated in this text as, homage to you who inspire faith in beings too, who merely see you. If beings happen to gaze on you, at once they know you are holy. This is really a beautiful practice. I invite all of you to come around on Tuesday night. It's not long, it's pretty brief, so you'll get back home early on a work night. But it's a praise to Shakyamuni Buddha written by Maitreya. And Shakyamuni Buddha was the guru of Maitreya. So when Shakyamuni Buddha came to Earth in India 2,600 years ago, he passed on his position in the heavenly realms to Maitreya, and Maitreya is the preceptor there, and he will be the next Buddha who comes in this era. There are 1,000 Buddhas, Shakyamuni being the fourth, Maitreya being the fifth. All of those Buddhas have been prophesied and named in the sutras. We know now who they are, who their names are, and the order in which they will come. Maitreya Buddha is the Buddha of love. So that will be, every Buddha has a sort of, I don't want to call it a specialty, but in a way it is. And Maitreya is love. Shakyamuni Buddha is the only one out of 1,000 who taught the Vajrayana. That makes Vajrayana even more special. It's rarer. It's extremely rare. And there are gaps between when these Buddhas come, sometimes long gaps. So, you know, in the scheme of things, this is a very, very auspicious time to be alive, to have a precious human rebirth, to be exposed to these teachings, and it's something that we should really think about, contemplate, and meditate on, that we really have an opportunity here, which may never come again. That's my advertisement for the Tuesday night meditation here. Wednesday night is Chenrezig compassion practice. If you want to summarize Mahayana path in one word, it would be compassion. So that's to develop compassion. And then on Sunday, there's Manjushri practice to develop wisdom, and Grintara practice to develop activities. So that concludes the sixth chapter on patience. Let's pause and ask if there's any questions about patience. The next chapter, which is chapter 7, the chapter on diligence, which is a term that I'm not really crazy about. I prefer translation being joyous enthusiasm. To me, diligence sounds kind of like hard work, whereas joyous enthusiasm sounds more joyful. However, it's very often referred to as diligence, and in our readings it will be mostly referred to as diligence. Sakyapandita talks about diligence by saying the explanation of diligence has three main parts: the definition, ascertaining the nature, and the benefits of diligence. The definition of diligence is enthusiasm for what is virtuous in order to benefit others. Shantideva teaches, quote, "What is diligence? It is enthusiasm for the virtuous," unquote. Sakyapandita continues, "If that diligence is complete with proper preparation, actual practice, and conclusion, then it becomes the perfection of diligence." 42nd Sakyatrizin says, "The definition of diligence, which is sundru in Tibetan." Did I pronounce that correctly, Stephen?
Yeah, I don't know how it's spelled, so I can't say.
It's got that funny Wiley spelling that I can't...
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, the definition of diligence is enthusiasm for what is virtuous in order to benefit others. It means exerting ourselves with great joy in virtuous deeds for the sake of all sentient beings. If we perform virtuous deeds because we're forced to, or due to an obligation, such as when we have to study for many hours, then that's just effort. And it's not the diligence that we're talking about in this chapter. Also, putting effort into non-virtuous deeds is not diligence. I don't think there's a word in English that captures the full meaning of the term sundru, or however you pronounce it, and so, for the sake of convenience, we will use the word diligence. In general, the diligence that we're talking about here means to joyfully exert effort to perform virtuous deeds. The perfection of diligence then refers to this effort sealed by the right motivation of the enlightenment thought in the beginning, by special wisdom in the middle, and by proper dedication at the end. And then it becomes the complete act of the perfection of diligence.
Can you repeat the last two sentences, please?
In general, the diligence that we are talking about here means to joyfully exert effort to perform virtuous deeds. The perfection of diligence then refers to this effort, sealed by the right motivation of the enlightenment thought in the beginning, by special wisdom in the middle.
So the generation of bodhicitta. Okay.
And by the proper dedication at the end. Then it becomes the complete act of the perfection of diligence. His Holiness goes on to the next section, which is ascertaining the nature of diligence. Ascertaining its nature has three subsidiary topics: identifying the antithesis of diligence, discerning the individual antidotes to laziness, which is the antithesis to diligence, and correctly accomplishing diligence. So first of all, identifying the antithesis of diligence. The antithesis of diligence is laziness, which can be classified in various ways. And in Sakyapandita's text, it's classified as threefold from the perspective of failure to engage in virtuous deeds with body, speech, and mind. Shantideva, on the other hand, classifies laziness from the perspective of its cause as being due to attachment to unwholesome activities and due to lack of self-confidence. It's also discussed in terms of engaging in neutral activities. The opposite of diligence is not just the failure to accomplish virtuous actions, but it's also mistakenly exerting oneself in the wrong path. This too is considered a form of laziness from the Buddhist perspective. Furthermore, unless our virtuous deeds are causes for attaining the state of perfect enlightenment, which is the ultimate result of true diligence according to the Mahayana Great Vehicle Tradition, they do not constitute the perfection of diligence. In other words, virtuous deeds that bring about minor, temporary results within cyclic existence, such as a higher rebirth or nirvana, they are not the perfection of diligence. The virtues referred to in the definition of the perfection of diligence are those that bring about the attainment of the state of perfect enlightenment, with our actions sealed by bodhicitta enlightenment thought, special wisdom, and the proper dedication. Now, having identified laziness, it's important to consider its harmful consequences in this life and in all future lives. In this life, we will not be able to escape our misery if we procrastinate and abandon our efforts due to faint-heartedness or being overpowered by mental afflictions. Without hard work, people cannot make a good living and escape poverty. And in the same way, if due to faint-heartedness we don't apply ourselves with great diligence in the practice of virtuous deeds, we will be unable to escape our mental afflictions and will suffer from them as a result. In order to free our mind from defilements, we must abandon faint-heartedness and joyfully exert ourselves in the right path. This will enable us to accomplish beneficial qualities. Without encouragement, confidence, and joyful effort, we cannot accomplish any great goal, let alone liberation. With them, however, we will be able to overcome even great adversity. Laziness will preclude us from hearing the Buddha's teachings and from ever meeting a Buddha. It is an obstacle to performing virtuous deeds in general, and in particular to our Dharma practice. With hard work, even a farmer or an ordinary business person can become very successful. But if lazy, even a king can lose his kingdom. In the Madhyamaka Avatara, Chandrakirti explains that all excellent qualities follow diligence. Regarding the destruction of happiness for ourselves and others in all future lives, Shantideva said, like a fish flopping about on dry land, you remain tormented in this life and on your deathbed. His Holiness continues, if we cannot bear the suffering and problems of this life, how will we be able to endure the sufferings of the lower realms, especially the hell realms? Therefore, in order to free ourselves from greater sufferings in the future, we must put up with the problems and sufferings we face now. If we give in to faint-heartedness, laziness will destroy the possibility of gaining liberation for our own benefit and Buddhahood for the benefit of all others. A person is generally considered very capable when they earn their own livelihood and they're able to support their relatives and their friends. However, these are mundane actions that are commonly motivated by mental afflictions, which in turn are based on self-grasping. Such actions are actually the cause of suffering and can lead to rebirth in the lower realms, where we will suffer for an inconceivable amount of time. From this point of view, we can say that those who are focused on mundane activities alone are, in fact, not capable. Those who are truly capable perform virtuous deeds, which are the cause of gaining liberation and the state of enlightenment. With these, they accomplish their own purpose and are also able to lead others to achieve the ultimate goal of Buddhahood. In brief, if we give in to laziness in this life, the consequences we will have to suffer in our future lives will be severe, as it will destroy our own happiness and that of others. It will also cause us to remain for an inconceivably long time in the three lower realms, where we will have to experience unimaginable suffering. Now we get to hear Ape Rinpoche, what he has to say. Ape Rinpoche, by the way, was a great Sakya master contemporary who did all kinds of amazing things. He was one of the gurus of Sakya Trichin the 41st. He also founded Sakya College, International Buddhist Academy, and was considered a very kind and humble master, respected by everybody. And he commented, the fourth perfection, the perfection of enthusiasm, or joyous effort, is defined as the mental state which takes joy in virtue. If our enthusiasm is motivated by the wish to liberate all sentient beings from the prison of cyclic existence, conjoined with the Mahayana view of ultimate reality, our practice becomes the perfection of enthusiasm. The forces opposed to the perfection of enthusiasm are, number one, the laziness of not engaging in virtuous deeds through body, speech, and mind. Number two, the laziness of, although being ostensibly engaged, striving diligently to cultivate deeds which are not virtuous deeds, while taking them to be virtuous, such as practices that heretics do. For example, human sacrifices, animal sacrifices, things like that. And number three, the laziness of putting effort into virtuous deeds, which result in the extremes of worldly existence and minor liberation. A disadvantage of laziness is being unable to accomplish even ordinary worldly objectives, let alone spiritual activities of listening, contemplating, and meditating. If we attempt to practice the spiritual path without enthusiasm, we will never accomplish the result. Furthermore, if we are lazy in our practice, the results gained in previous lifetimes may be lost. When people are feeling lazy, they may think that some kind of demon is obstructing them and causing the laziness. However, Buddha said, laziness itself is the demon. There is no outside force causing it. So, whenever we find ourselves slipping into laziness, we should call to mind the following. Laziness is the greatest obstacle of all to accomplishing the path of Dharma. Buddha said that without enthusiasm, we will never be able to accomplish even our own purpose, let alone the purpose of helping other sentient beings. And in a sutra, it is said that unless we possess enthusiasm, we cannot accomplish the practice of the other perfections. Regarding the antithesis, Sakyapandita said, the antithesis of diligence has two parts, identifying laziness and considering its harmful consequences. What is laziness? Laziness is the opposite of diligence. It's the failure of body, speech, and mind to engage in the virtuous. Or even if you do engage in that, it is to diligently cultivate what is not wholesome, taking it to be wholesome. Or, even if you do apply yourself to what is wholesome, it is to strive diligently at things that will result in either the extreme of cyclic existence or the extreme of nirvana. Reflecting on the harmful consequence of laziness has two aspects. Reflection on the harmful consequence in this life and reflection on how it destroys the happiness in all future lives. Regarding the harm caused by laziness in this life, Shantideva says, quote, can the faint-hearted and those who abandon endeavor find an escape from this impoverishment? Someone who is assertive and energetic will be difficult to overcome, even by adversity. End of the quote. Sakyapandita continues by saying, thus, if people who procrastinate because of timidity and laziness cannot even obtain food and clothing or accomplish farming and trading in the present life, it goes without saying that they will not be able to accomplish such virtuous things as learning, reflection, and meditation. Through laziness, kings lose their kingdoms, and even ordinary people fail in agriculture, trading, and so forth. On the destruction of happiness in all future lives, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra teaches, for instance, through laziness, you cannot even accomplish your own welfare, let alone the welfare of others. And Shantideva said, if, like a fish flopping about on dry land, you remain tormented in this life on your deathbed, what need is there to mention the unbearable agonies that your evil deeds will cause you in the lower realms? Sakyapandita says, you should ponder at great length the point of these and similar passages. Sakyapandita continues saying, discerning the individual antidotes to laziness, there are two topics, the causes of laziness and the antidote to the result. The antidote to the causes of laziness, Shantideva explains as follows, quote, laziness, attachment to base activities, discouragement, belittling yourself, indolence, enjoying pleasurable tastes, craving sleep, and not feeling disillusioned with the suffering of cyclic existence, by those things, laziness is produced. Unquote. Sakyapandita explains that the laziness mentioned in this passage refers to procrastination about all activities. Attachment to base activities refers to being attached to inferior worldly activities such as business and farming. Discouragement means aversion to applying yourself to spiritual activities because you formerly engaged in spiritual activities, but all did not go according to your wishes. Belittling yourself means to think, oh, someone like me could never accomplish virtuous practices. Indolence refers to not engaging in virtuous practices because you are always lying down or resting. Enjoying pleasurable tastes means being attached to eating, drinking, humorous chatter, and so forth. Craving sleep means not engaging in the virtuous because you spend so much time, both day and night, in sleep. Not disillusioned by cyclic existence refers to someone who has no realization at all of the suffering of birth, sickness, old age, and death, and who therefore does not apply themselves to the virtuous. This and the others give rise to laziness. Concerning the antidotes to these, Shantideva said, quote, after being caught by the fishers of the afflictions and after entering the net of births, why do I still not realize that I have gone into the mouth of the Lord of Death? Have you not seen the gradual slaughtering of your kind? Someone who still resorts to sleep is like a water buffalo sleeping with its butcher. Blocking all routes of escape, the Lord of Death is staring at you. How can you enjoy eating? How can you enjoy going to sleep? Death approaches quickly, so I must accumulate merit for as much time as remains. What use will it be to abandon laziness at the time of death itself? By then, the proper time will have passed. With this remaining undone, with that just started, and with this other remaining half finished, the Lord of Death suddenly will appear, and you will think, oh no, I'm done for. End of Shantideva's quote. Through these and other verses, Sakyapandita continues, ponder again and again all the disadvantages of cyclic existence, and you will thereby turn away from laziness. So that concludes the antidote to the cause, and I think I'll stop there and ask if there's any questions about laziness and diligence. Okay, well, I think we'll stop there and do our meditation prayers. So nam dehi tam che jigpani tob nani pe danam pam jeti ke gana chi balu Ma ke panam ke gyurchi Kemanyam parme paryam gong me gong tu pel parsho jampa pao jitar ken padam gundusam budu yang nishinti dila kungi jesu da loji gewa dida tam che rab tu mu tu sum she pi gawa tam je ki nu wa gong la chu tu na pa gi da chen ge re ca wa li gun kyang sang po chu chi rab tu mu Sawa dang cho ching sha pa dang Jesu yi rang ku shing so a yi Ye wa chung ze da gi chi sak pa Tam Jesu pe chang chu chi By this merit, may all attain omniscience, may defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all of my own virtues that I may train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise the Supreme by the victorious Buddhas in the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddha. May whatever virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment.
That's big Dave Che.
Thank you.